From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Angels. Well, it is beginning to look a lot like Christmas, isn't it? Here's what's happening. The mutated coronavirus strain circulating in the United Kingdom, which has sparked panic and caught global attention, as now more than 40 countries have issued travel bans, has likely already crossed into the U.S. borders. The former U.S. Food Administration Commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, made this announcement. Meanwhile, the New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he believes that the new variant has already arrived in the U.S. and announced that he has asked three major airlines to add New York State to the list of 120 countries requiring passengers traveling from the United Kingdom to get a negative COVID-19 test before boarding flights. Here we go again, folks. A letter signed by 120 people as of Friday, scientists say that they are calling for immediate, widespread, increased vitamin D intake, which we've been saying for some time now, to 4,000 international units, IU, per day, or at least 2,000 minimum for healthy adults. The scientists involved in the open letter say the global patterns and risk factors for the COVID-19 pandemic and vitamin D deficiency match precisely due to the impact on the immune function. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, that's something we've been talking about for some time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, some of these nutritional products, you know, the zinc and the vitamin D, they're essential in terms of boosting immunity, but so is vitamin C. I mean, that was over 50 years ago.
Yep.
That Linus Pauling wrote his very famous book about vitamin C in the common cold, which was, of course, a coronavirus, even back then. So, yeah, there's a lot of products that are out there that can help people boost their immunity. But, you know, that's not something that really monetizes well for major drug companies. So they really don't like stories like the ivermectin one or the hydroxychloroquine, because anything that you know, is inexpensive and they can't capitalize with massive profits, especially these government contracts, billions and billions of dollars that have gone out to Pfizer and to, you know, Moderna are, you know, that's where their profit is. So they're not going to approve anything except, you know, something where the drug companies are the winners.
Keep watching these stories for us, John, and have yourself a great Christmas, you and your family. Federal health officials sent a warning letter to the chief executive officer of Whole Foods after discovering that undeclared allergens were leading cause for dozens of its recalls. In the letter issued Tuesday, the FDA addressed John Mackey, who co-founded and has overseen the company since 1978. Whole Foods was acquired by Amazon in 2017 for just over $13 billion. The FDA, which reviewed the history of food recalls for the company, claimed that it engaged in a pattern of receiving and offering for sale misbranded food products. A popular holiday dessert sold at Trader Joe's locations is facing a recall after it was found that the product may contain undeclared pecans. It's called Almond Kringle, sold at Trader Joe's stores in at least 9 states: Texas, Tennessee, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Louisiana, Colorado, Kansas, Arkansas, and Alabama. People who have allergies could be severely affected by this. U.S. consumer confidence dropped for a second straight month in December as a deterioration in the labor market amid renewed business restrictions to slow the raging pandemic offset the rollout of a vaccine for COVID-19. And President Donald Trump said he is asking for changes to the coronavirus relief bill passed by Congress, leaving the future of the $900 billion stimulus package in doubt. The president's position could threaten to torpedo the carefully drafted bill, which his own administration helped negotiate. He says the $600 per individual is way too low. He calls it ridiculously low. He wants it increased to $2,000 or $4,000 per couple. Charles Koppes, author of America's Financial Reckoning Day, with us. What do you think of the president's statement, Charles?
Well, you know, he's trying to help the American people. And look, $600 is kind of measly. It was $1,200 before. And, you know, this is a $900 billion COVID relief bill. to help small businesses and unemployed people out there. And he could have a pocket veto if he just, you know, put it in his pocket. That's what they call it. But he complained about the all the pork in this bill, George. This is $2.3 trillion omnibus bill. That means all catch-all kind of thing. It's to fund every department in the federal government and through 2021. This is the longest bill, not the biggest, but the longest bill in U.S. history. It's 5,600 pages long, 1.4 million words, and it would take 80 hours to read. In fact, no congressman was able to read it. It's just an up or down vote. And this is why today Senator Rand Paul voted against it, even AOC did, because this is no way to run your government. I mean, I care for people, but there is funding for foreign governments, military-industrial complex, the Kennedy Center, gender studies in Pakistan, and all the lobbyists in D.C. And, you know, this is why people, I think, have become so cynical about the District of Criminals. That's what mission mm-hmm. I call it. And even Pelosi today said this is an important initial step for spending, more spending. Even Trump wants more spending, but Senator Schumer said this is a down payment for, you know, 2021. So on it goes into the new year, and I don't know where it's going to end, but I'm finishing my free newsletter tonight for a Thursday deadline. If people want to sign up, they can do it at idpconsultinggroup.com. And I'll have much more to say on this, and I want to wish you a safe Christmas and a happy new year out there to you and your listeners.
Thank you, Chuck. IDPconsulting.com for his newsletter. Well, a research group written by experts at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory say that the Milky Way may be full of aliens who annihilated themselves, according to a study. How in the world they know that? Or even surmise that is beyond me, but that's what they say. In a moment, the decline of nations. How do great nations end up declining? We'll be talking with Joe Johnston about that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Are we headed for decline as a nation? I mean, all the other huge companies in countries, of course, that got involved in being in just the top of the heat, they fell apart. Well, we've got an interesting story with you. Joe Johnston Jr. with us. His book is called The Decline of Nations, Lessons for Strengthening America at Home and in the World. Joe, welcome to the program. Fascinating work, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, when we talk about the decline of nations, let's go way back for a moment to, like, the Romans and the Brits in England. With the Romans, of course, would you say they were the first huge nation of the planet?
Well, there were some big nations. I mean, China was older than Rome, so there were big nations. Rome was in what we call the Western world, the one that we usually look back to. They were enormous. I mean, they covered huge territory all the way from England and the Northwest all the way across Europe and into Asia Minor, Africa and Spain, the whole Mediterranean basin. They covered an enormous territory. So they were big, no question.
Tell me about the decline of nations. Why'd you write this book?
Well, I started out in college. I actually wrote my college thesis on the decline and fall of the Roman Empire by Edward Gibbon, and that got me interested in the subject. And I was just curious, and I read a lot of books after that as to why some nations seemed to thrive and some declined. And I quickly realized that almost every nation in the history of the world has declined at some point or other. Some of them came back, some of them didn't come back. The Roman Empire declined over a long period of about 1,000 years, and they eventually collapsed entirely and were invaded by barbarians. The British Empire, on the other hand, declined at one point and lost their empire, but then they came back under Margaret Thatcher and mm-hmm. later, and now are not as big a nation, not an empire anymore, but still a prosperous and free and prosperous nation.
I mean, there was a time the Brits were everywhere. They were in the countries in Africa. They were all over the planet, weren't they?
Sure. I remember as a little kid, I had a globe, And that globe was pink all the way over, around. I mean, they had enormous empire. They controlled India. They controlled countries in Africa. And, of course, in this, our hemisphere, the American states, Canada, all the way around to Australia, they were enormous. But they actually were so big, they could not adequately control that much territory, either financially or militarily, and eventually they lost it.
And this story eventually will lead to us talking about the United States, because we have been a very dominant nation, but can we reach the same fate as some of these other countries have?
Well, sure.
That's scary times.
Sure, it's quite possible. As nations get old, they tend to get tired, and when nations become wealthy, for example, they tend to become decadent.
That's right.
They become addicted to luxury, abundance, and leisure. Their military discipline declines. They work less. They demand more from government. And gradually, the society grows more feeble, and then eventually it declines.
Joe, what is wrong with governments? Why can't we, as a world, simply get together with every country and make this a better planet for every human being? Why can't we do that?
Well, we've tried that. They tried that in the League of Nations after World War I, and that didn't work. Eventually, it collapsed.
But why doesn't it work?
We tried it again after World War II with the United Nations. The United Nations is still there, but it certainly hasn't done much to...
No.
Strengthen the nations that belong to it.
Is it greed? Is there just too much greed out there?
There is. Greed is part of it. The collapse of morality is part of the decline of nations. The collapse of religion and morality leads to selfishness. It leads to greed. It leads to immorality. The continuation of those trends leads to weakness, national weakness, and ultimately to decline.
Now, back to the Romans for a moment. During the period of Christ, and they had him crucified, how dominant were they at that point? That's going way back.
Well, yes. Rome was still dominant. Rome was, of course, founded in about 700 or 600 B.C., they lasted over 1,000 years. By the time the Christians came along, the Roman Empire had already begun to decline. Actually, Christianity helped to revive the Roman Empire for a while under Constantine, and that was in around 300 to 312. But then it continued to decline, and eventually, even though Christianity was a superior religion to paganism, Roman paganism, by that time the empire had become so weak and so overstretched and so financially incapable that it could not survive, and it was taken over by barbarians.
Is it leadership as well that falters?
Certainly leadership was part of it. The Roman Empire originally had strong leadership in Augustus, who was the first emperor. Then it sank badly under Augustus's successors, Caligula, and some of the rest of those emperors in the first century A.D., who were terrible. They were corrupt. They were vicious. And later on, there were some better emperors, Trajan and Hadrian and so forth, who revived the empire. But then the empire was not solid because the emperors, for example, continued to change. There was no mechanism for providing an imperial succession from one to the other. And for instance, in the third century AD, you had something like over 100 emperors in one century. So it was very unstable, the Roman Constitution,
mm-hmm.
and eventually that contributed to their collapse.
You believe that part of a nation's success deals with a strong economy and a strong military. Tell me about that.
Definitely. The strong military is very important to the survival of a nation. If it can't defend itself, it's going to be overrun by somebody. The Roman Empire had an extremely strong military for a long period, which was bolstered by the strong economy. Those two things go together. The Romans had a very strong agricultural and commercial economy. They never developed an industrial economy, but they didn't really need it in those days. But the industrial economy today is extremely important. Without a solid national economy, you can't produce the arms that are necessary to defend yourself. Not to mention, you won't have a prosperous people.
Well, that's true. Now, when you mentioned earlier that a nation gets decadent, in what ways? Always in morality, everything like that?
Well, yeah, that's right. It's partly morality, but it's also the fact that it inhibits the work ethic. It inhibits their ability to trade. It inhibits their as I mentioned, the military power, and gradually the country grows more feeble.
What about educational systems of the era and now today? How important is that?
Well, education is always important because children have to be brought up to understand and believe in the strengths of a nation, in its founding principles, and they have to be taught to be patriotic and to support the government and to support the prosperity of the people. If the educational system deteriorates, then you lose that sense of civic duty and solidarity. And what happened in the Roman Empire was the educational system, along with religion and morality and everything else, declined. We have that problem today in the United States. Our educational system is weak. Children are not learning what they should learn in order to become productive citizens.
Was it ever strong, Joe?
Yes. The educational system was relatively strong in the 19th century, up until the early 20th century, when the progressive movement took over and began watering down the vitality of the educational system. Standards were lowered. The textbooks were dumbed down. Children were given less homework.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually the educational system deteriorated until by the end of the 20th century, the students, if you look at the international tests, the PISA tests and the SAT tests.
SATs, sure.
We're way down in the middle of the pack and among the industrial countries. So something's got to be done to change that.
Was it because of money? I mean, you went to Harvard, great university, expensive, of course. You got your law degree there. But, I mean, is a quality education expensive?
It is expensive, but America spends a lot of money on its educational system, but the money is not well spent. Teachers are not required to actually be proficient in what they're teaching. And the amount of discipline that goes into the educational system has been reduced. As I mentioned, high school kids come out of high school today and they do not know what they need to know to become active and citizens and to be fully employed. And they don't do enough homework. The textbooks have been dumbed down, and this is folly. I mean, you've got to improve the standards. You've got to improve discipline. High school kids should be, if they don't end up going to college, and a lot of them don't, they should be given vocational skills.
Absolutely. Okay. Joe, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about the decline of nations and will it happen to the United States. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, the decline of nations. Joe Johnston Jr. with us. Joe, what is it about nations that need to grow and expand and conquer?
Well, that is one of the characteristics of a rising nation. They do tend to expand. Unfortunately, some of them overexpand. And you can see that, for example, in the Roman Empire. They started out as a republic in Italy, and they conquered Italy, and then they began to go into Gaul and elsewhere. And finally, they were so extended that they could no longer financially or militarily defend the vast amount of territory that they had. In other words, they were overextended, or, as historian Paul Kennedy says in his really good book, the Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, they were overstretched. And if to try to control all that territory from Britain all the way across Europe into Asia Minor and, mm-hmm. and North Africa and Spain, they just couldn't afford to do it. And that the same thing happened to the British Empire. They had so many vast territories all over the world that they simply could not afford to defend all those places. And eventually they couldn't, so they had to divest themselves of their empire. And that's a risk. And that's a risk that we have to worry about.
Joe, let's go back and talk about the United States now, and we'll ultimately end up to where we are today. But in your opinion, at what point in our creation as a nation did we become great?
Well, I think in essence we were great almost from the beginning. We broke away from Britain beginning in 1776, and the Constitution was 1789-90, and then we had to fight another war against Britain, War of 1812. And by the early part of the 19th century, we had begun to expand, and of course we did expand, and because Jefferson acquired Louisiana, we expanded there, and we expanded into the Northwest, and ultimately all the way to the Pacific. And so from the very beginning, we were a strong nation. We were expansionary. We were solid. We had a solid military. We had a growing economy. And that lasted throughout the 19th century and certainly well into the 20th century. After World War II, after all, we were, along with the Soviet Union, the two predominant powers in the world.
That's right. All right, where do we stand today, in your opinion?
Well, I think we have some weaknesses. We are still an enormously powerful country. We still have a strong economy. But, for example, we are overstretched financially. We have incurred enormous deficits in our fiscal policy. We have enormous debts. We have over $27 trillion worth of debt.
We're going to add more to it, too, pretty soon.
And we keep adding to it, and we keep spending more. I mean, we're just about to pass another $1 trillion worth. A lot of that's due to the
sadly necessary to help some people and businesses. It's like a catch 22.
Part of it's due to the coronavirus, which of course was not our fault, nobody's fault. So you have to do some of that, but we are financially overstretched, and there's an enormous amount of financial irresponsibility. Just in this latest bill, which I know you've covered on your program probably, there's an enormous amount of wasteful spending in there.
For a lot of other nations, too.
For a lot of other nations, too.
Our money for them. Crazy.
That's right. So we have got to be more careful in our spending and in our borrowing.
How would you compare China today to us today?
Well, the Chinese, of course, have grown very rapidly, both industrially and militarily, and they are a rising threat. There's no question about it. They have militarized the South China Sea.
They've landed on the moon. They picked up samples and flew them back, for crying out loud. Their technology is as good as ours.
Well, that's right. And they're stealing our technology. They are subsidizing their industries. And in a sense, they're eating our lunch economically. And we
make it. They eat it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they're growing militarily to be a real threat. And I think we have to pay a lot more attention to the Chinese than we have traditionally.
Do you think one day they will try to topple us as a nation?
Well, I think there's a serious risk of that. They have said that they want to try to become the world's leading industrial and scientific power, and they are...
Well, they can do that, though, without attacking us, right?
Well, they are militarily now capable of doing extensive damage to us.
And we are to them.
And we are to them. So I think that we need to worry about specifically certain aspects of our defense, such as anti-missile defense, space, particularly space warfare, which the Chinese are moving into, things like that, cyber warfare. Is something that they're quite good at. We have got to modernize rapidly in those areas, or otherwise we do face the possibility that we could actually lose a war, for example, in East Asia, should the Chinese, for example, move against Taiwan, or even more extensively than that.
Which they will at one point. It's bound to happen.
Which they seem to be intent on doing, yes.
And I'm not sure we're going to be capable or willing to step in to stop it.
Well, that certainly is a problem, George. I mean,
and then today Russia and China did some war exercises. I mean, it's shaping up to be not too good.
Yeah, it looks very difficult, and we have got to keep up our military strength. That's absolutely essential, particularly as I said, in these new areas such as cyber warfare, space warfare, missile technology, hypersonic missiles, those type of things which are very expensive, and we just cannot afford to be second rate in our military capacity.
Whether you agree with the tragedy of COVID-19 or not, the bottom line is governmental leaders have shut our country down over the appearance of COVID-19.
That's right.
And look how devastating that is to us with this. God knows what could happen if we get hit with some kind of missile attack or something else.
Well, that's right. And the reaction to COVID on the part of some of our governors has deprived Americans of some of their basic liberties. I mean, freedom of association.
And businesses, too.
And small businesses, particularly small businesses, many of them are failing. Restaurants, for example. I mean, small companies are going out of business because of this. So I think there's been an overreaction on the part of politicians to this, or at least they're not being sufficiently careful in some of these shutdown orders.
Now, in dealing with the demise of an empire, what happens to family values and things like that when a nation begins to decline?
Well, that's an extremely good question, George. And family values, for instance, family values such as the solidarity that families bring, and so on, are extremely important. And there are certain institutions and certain principles that are basic to the liberty of a free republic. The family is one of them. The churches, the strong communities, and principles such as hard work, loyalty, discipline, courage, patriotism, and so on. If those things begin to deteriorate, then you no longer have the civic will to defend yourself or to achieve the prosperity that the people of the United States are entitled to.
Joe, with the decline of a nation, is it a combination of many of the things we've talked about, or is there one big factor that contributes to it?
It's a combination, I think, of many, many things. We've talked about a lot of them. Industrial, military, strong communities, strong religion, morality, strong educational system, all of those things together create a strong people and a civic-minded people and a patriotic people that can defend themselves and that can bring prosperity to the country as a whole. It's not just one thing.
And your book is like a playbook for a presidential candidate to be able to go through these things. And if they get elected, you simply hire the best people for each category and say, fix these things.
Well, yes. And that, one of the reasons I wrote the book was to try to provide an overall picture of what a successful nation needs to be and what things it needs to preserve, such as strong families, strong morality, strong churches, and strong communities in order to survive.
What percent would you say of the positivity of a nation would you say we have as a nation?
Well, that's a tough question, George. I mean, to try to talk in terms of percentages.
I mean, are we like 50% of what we should be, 70%?
I would hope that we still have at least... We're still in the 50% category. We're still a very strong nation. I don't want to oversell the decline aspect of this. We're still strong. We're still vital.
Sure.
But we've got to keep it up.
I think they've all declined, haven't they? All the nations. I mean, China, as much as they have expanded economically and militarily, they're screwed up internally.
Well, they certainly have. They are not strong in the sense of preserving liberty. They're not a free country. I mean,
Well, are we right now?
Well, our liberties are perhaps threatened, but we still are basically a free people. I think.
We think we are.
We think we are. Certain of our liberties have been threatened. Certainly. Freedom of speech is under threat. Even freedom of religion in certain situations has been put in jeopardy by some decisions of the courts, for example, prayer in schools and things like that. So our liberties are something that we have to be very careful about. And in certain respects, they have been diminished. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association are under threat, and we have to watch that.
I mean, we've done some great things as a nation. We've come a long way with civil rights. We still have a long way to go, but, I mean, we've done some dramatic things over the past few years, strengthening civil rights and things like that. But
right,
there's some other areas we've declined in.
Well, yes, that's right. That's right, George. I mean, we have done better. We have a lot of people out there saying that we're a systemically racist nation. I don't believe that. I think we have improved the situation there. We're not perfect by any extent. We have a ways to go, but when you consider where we were, 100 years ago.
Oh my God, it's dramatic. And consider this. I mean, we elected an African American president for two terms. So we're, as a nation overall, we're not racist. Individuals, there are some, no doubt about that. We're going to come back and take calls with you next, Joe, on Coast to Coast AM.